we've got a wild U.S. Senate race in the state of Alaska. It's going to be change no matter what happens, and certainly a difficult choice for Alaska's voters. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Today, for the first time, we meet the Democratic nominee, Scott McAdams. Our phone number, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Email talk at APRN.org. Our guest is Scott McAdams, fisherman, educator, mayor, and now senatorial candidate on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
And welcome to Talk of Alaska. Scott McAdams, it's good to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. It's great to be here.
I am want to let our listeners know that we're doing an experiment. We're doing this from the television studio. And so it's if anything is strange or offbeat about the show, it might have to do with the new technology that we're using
here. Well, I'm honored to be your first subject test here.
You're looking great on TV so far.
Thank you. Thanks.
So, Scott, this is probably a wilder ride than you thought you were going to get when you first decided to run.
Sure. I mean, absolutely. It has definitely changed over time, and things have greatly accelerated in the last month or so. But, you know, we're up, we're running a fundamental campaign, and we're preparing to win this thing.
A fundamental campaign.
Have all the pieces. You know, we have a great field operation. This weekend, we made over 3,000 calls. We're touching the hand of every voter that we can meet. We're getting out, talking about issues, introducing ourselves. We have all the pieces. We've got a media strategy. We've got some really smart people who've worked for Knowles and for Begich who've come to our team. And so, you know, we're going to keep plugging away at this thing. I think that there is definitely a national story here that is more between Senator Murkowski and Joe Miller. You know, for us, this is about Alaska. It's about Alaskan towns. It's about our experience serving Alaskan communities, and that's what we're going to campaign on.
It would seem that what's happened so far is the limelight has gone to the other two candidates, and I guess there's a risk that you kind of get drowned out. And your strategy, you're telling me, is to go for a ground game.
You know, the viewing audience in Miami and Las Vegas aren't the people who choose Alaska's next Senate candidate and Alaska's next senator. You know, we're getting out talking to Alaskans all over. The thing about Alaska, we're a small population state. We're 300 small towns, including Anchorage. And so, you know, word of mouth is a campaign strategy in a state the size of Alaska. You know, we'll leave the national media celebrity to Joe Miller. That seems to be his greatest interest. But, you know, we're going to keep plugging away, earning the confidence of people, letting them know our public service record. And we expect to win.
So if I say some Alaska stuff to you, like, let's say, extra tufts and pick and fish, you're going to know what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Go ahead and give me some credentials here.
Sure. Well, I first moved to Alaska at age 7. We moved up here, my mom, my sister, and I, to start a new life in Alaska. It was a great place to grow up. Petersburg is a commercial fishing town. 85 cents on the dollar in that economy comes from commercial fishing. So I was incubated in a fishing community, and so I feel like I speak the language. I went to high school down south, came back at 20, and started working in the industry. Worked in my first summer back, butchering crab at Omer's Cannery down in Petersburg. And then joined the fleet, started fishing, long-lined and seined. Spent some time out in the Bering Sea long-lining, seined up in the Kodiak area, seined down in southeast and long-lined out in the Gulf. It's, you know, in coastal Alaska and Alaska overall, you know, our resource extraction industries, the unique way of life that we have, that's where I come from.
Well, it just seems odd that someone with that sort of background ends up running for the U.S. Senate. I understand that you got involved in the school board, but why did you ever decide to start running for office and in Sitka?
You know, I graduated from Sheldon Jackson College in Sitka. While I was there, I actually served as a student body president of the school. I was one of these guys who I met my wife 17 years ago, got married. She was one of these folks who graduated from college on a Friday, flew to Alaska on a Saturday, and met me on Monday. Very squared away, very organized. A great catch for me. I have a campaign ad that jokes about how I married up. Well, it's certainly true. But you know, I first got involved in governance as a student. I went back to school at 26 after IFQs hit down in Southeast. It was a little bit tougher to find a crew job. Decided to go back to school, got involved in student government, started getting involved a little bit in community, served on the Long Range Planning Economic Development Commission in Sitka.
So what year would that have been?
Boy, that would have been around the year, let's see, would have been around 2000.
By this time, they're pretty well given up on the timber industry in that town.
Yeah, the mill in Sitka shut down in 92. We've got kids who are seniors in high school who weren't around when timber was going full scale in Southeast. But yeah, so I showed up to a meeting, had something to say. Folks said, you know, Scott, you should run for the board. I was actually involved in youth football in my town, and one of my many interests, getting involved in community. Showed up at a school board meeting, advocated for putting the high school program in the school. And from that, people started to say, "Boy, Scott, you should really run for the school board." Well, I did, and I soon found out that the breadth and depth of governance is a lot more than any one single issue or any one set of special issues. So, loved it. Got really immersed in public education, in school governance. That's what my degree's in as well. Ended up serving a term as the president of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I was able to advocate for Alaska's unique needs before a national audience, both through the Delegate Assembly of National School Board Association, served on their Policy and Resolutions Committee, and was active even nationally in school governance. Chaired the local board for 3 years, and a couple folks asked me, you know, Scott, we like the way you run meetings. You ever think about running for mayor? And so I did, and I won. And, you know, I think what Alaskans are looking at here in this race is, I mean, and there is a lot of backstory behind Senator Murkowski, her defeat in the primary, the blessing of Sarah Palin on Joe Miller. There's almost a Greek tragedy going on here on the other side. Our campaign speaks to Alaskan communities. I mean, I'm somebody as a mayor who has stood in Washington, D.C. and advocated for expansion of our hydroelectric capacity, building our infrastructure in our town. Seeing the value of earmarks through the budgeting process. That's the record I bring, and that's what we're running on.
Scott McAdams is our guest. He's running for the U.S. Senate. He's a Democrat. He's out of Sitka, was raised in Petersburg, and did a bunch of commercial fishing. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, statewide. In Anchorage, it's a local call of 550-8422, and email is talk@APRN.org. Well, Scott, I guess we'll go into the education matter. And there's several branches to this. One of them is that you announced an education position, and it seems to be kind of a central element in your campaign. And yet, the teachers union, the biggest one anyway, has decided to endorse the write-in candidate, Lisa Murkowski.
Sure. The endorsement process for Senator Murkowski happened with their leadership committee back in June, I think about 2 days after I actually filed the recommendation, if I understand the way that history unfolded. This is a little bit of old news. I think when they came together, as I understand the process, they decided to keep that endorsement with Senator Murkowski, but this goes back pre-primary. But, you know, I'm the guy in this race who has a degree in education. I was an active voice in rewriting the state's foundation formula to bring more equity and adequacy to public education for Alaska's kids. I'm the guy who served at the local, state, and national level in school governance. And I'm a current employee of the Sitka School District. I work in my day job as the director of community schools, which does a lot of after schools programs, youth sports. So, you know, I certainly covet and will work to earn the vote of teachers all over the state. I believe I'm the education guy. I think that's clear. As far as the politics of the endorsement of membership organizations and their leadership, you know, I'll leave that to pundits. But, you know, Teachers should know. I will directly aim my campaign at them because I believe I've got the credentials to be the education candidate.
So maybe you can make your case a bit here. I mean, you started, I think, yesterday at a news conference. Say you're talking to a teacher right now, who no doubt you are.
Sure.
Retired teachers, too.
Sure.
And what can you do that Lisa Murkowski couldn't?
Well, you know, one of the things that I wouldn't have voted for, one of the things that I would have fought for was to keep local control of local schools at the local level. You know, No Child Left Behind. A lot of people talk about states' rights versus national supremacy. You know, when you look at No Child Left Behind, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest federal intrusions into local governance matters in the history of our republic. And I think it comes back to the child. You know, when you think about having a set of national education criteria, let's say national standards, and I think that's the direction that some, including my own party, Secretary Henry Duncan and even President Obama, where I greatly differ and disagree based on my experience in school leadership. You know, the thing about national standards, if you've got a set of national academic standards and making things so standard-driven, you create budget priorities that center around standards-based instruction. You know, a national standard can only be followed by a national curriculum and a national assessment. I think that's wrong. I think that's the wrong direction. We need to be child-centered in the way that we instruct, the way that we make budget priorities, because what happens, especially in schools that really can't afford to bear the cost of this, when you have an environment where teachers have to teach to a very narrow set of curriculum, they're only teaching to the test. What gets sacrificed are things like enrichment activities, art, music, after-school programs, activities and athletics. You know, when a school that's struggling only has enough money to, and here in Alaska, I mean, we got school districts where they're spending 35 cents on the dollar just to heat their buildings. That's another policy issue to have on the subject of energy. But, you know, what I would say to teachers is I understand and believe that a student-centered education that considers the whole child, not just their ability to perform on a test, but what kind of human beings we're helping endow with the skills to take over this economy and this society, you know, that should be the focus of public education. And when you remove that responsibility to self-determine at the local level and seat it in Washington, D.C., you lose something in your communities. And I think that your unique culture sometimes is in threat. There can be no national standard for UPIC language instruction. There can be no national standard for Arctic survival. When a kid takes a test, a NAEP test, or a standardized test in Barrow and answers the question, what country is south of the United States, and that child answers Canada, is that child wrong? You know, there's a lot of education. Standards are great for building bridges, for building roads, but not for building citizens.
Well, yeah. I mean, realistically, from the very beginning, there's been enormous opposition to No Child Left Behind in Alaska.
Yeah, there has been.
Yeah, because it doesn't fit. And I think anybody in the congressional delegation has tried to deal with that with mixed results. Do we have any reason to expect you to be any more effective than anyone else?
Well, you know, I think that it will be unique and that other than John Tester, I think I will be the school board senator. I mean, I'm somebody who has direct experience in school governance, who has had to have the difficult conversation with parents, with members of my community about budget priorities. You know, I've worked on and voted on six school budgets for my local school district. You know, I think just that experience when the conversation is going on in the room, you know, I think that voice will be part of the process. Granted, you know, any senator from Alaska is one of 100, but you know, that background I think is the right background to bring to Washington D.C. for Alaska's kids.
So, would you seek committee assignments then if you were a senator that would go to that area?
I certainly would be interested in serving on the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Board. I think that matches my some of my strengths and interests well. So Senator Murkowski has served on that committee as well, you know, but that's something I'll certainly pursue when I get there.
So has the party leadership, when Mark Begich ran, it was basically kind of a Schumer operation. I don't get the sense that you have that kind of backing from the National Party organization.
You know, it took a long time for the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee to come on board for Tony Knowles. It took them a long time, a lot of grooming, a lot of relationship building. For whatever reason, the culture of the DSCC is slow to move. Now, I have a little bit less time to do this.
Oh, you know, those Democrats.
Yeah, you know, but here's the thing. I mean, and here's what I would say to your listening audience. You know, the folks that... You know, there was a time in this race where I was running a bit of a citizens campaign, getting out and talking to folks all over the state, speaking to issues. Senator Murkowski is a Republican, has voted as a Republican, has been fourth in command in the minority organization. The suggestion of Joe Miller is completely untrue, completely false to call Senator Murkowski a liberal. If you look at her voting record, Senator Murkowski is a very charming and gracious person, but her voting record is absolutely conservative and Republican 100%. I mean, she, on maybe one or two things that I'm aware of, deviated from the party line. So, but you know, there was times during this campaign when I got out and would talk to anybody who would talk to me, you know, going from booth to booth, voter to voter. I was up at the Solstice Fair in Fairbanks in June, and you know, downtown, went from every booth, talked to different politicos, different, you know, talked to the Samuels campaign and the Parnell campaign and the Berkowitz and French campaigns, talked to all the locals, talked to people from nonprofits all over the place. And I talked to some of these folks who had on Joe Miller t-shirts. And I'll tell you, what was different about them than anyone else is that his base, his voters, have got a passion for this guy, a fervor that I didn't see in any other camp. You know, I think that come general election, these people are going to show up for Joe Miller. But I'll tell you what, back to the DSCC question, and, you know, they're coming closer. We're sending up three staff this week. Human resources certainly are what we need maybe the most in this campaign, and we're getting them from the DSCC. If I was a betting, I mean, I would bet that by the time this thing's over that they'll be there with money too. But, you know, the Tea Party Express, the people who believed in Miller, put $500,000 into this guy when he was down 30 points in two different polls, 30% to Lisa Murkowski. They put in $500,000. And, you know, that is a faith that defies reason. My call to Democrats, to progressives, to independents, is that we at this time cannot afford to look for reasons to lose faith. And, you know, everywhere we go, we grow. Our campaign's growing. The enthusiasm for our candidacy is growing. What I can say right now, based on the polling I've seen, is that a vote for Murkowski is a vote for Miller. We need strength from our base, and I believe we're there. I believe that that this thing's heading in the right direction, and I believe we'll win.
You spoke of passion. Seeing a passion in the people who are favoring and fans of Joe Miller and that movement. And of course, that would be a discontent with the way things are. Basically, a message like, we're mad as hell. We're not going to take it anymore. The government's taxing too much, trying to do too much, whatever it is, there is a fundamental discontent. Things aren't going the right way. Well, you know, Democrats are kind of in charge, and you'd be a Democrat. So how can you kindle a similar passion?
Well, you know, I think that there is some quite a bit of passion for our campaign. I mean, people are charged, people are energized. But I know, you know, there are a lot of folks that feel disenfranchised, that feel like the status quo isn't working. And I, you know, on a lot of those subjects, I'd agree. I maybe have different philosophy as to why and how we've got to the point we're at. You know, Washington, D.C. is broken. The Senate itself moves at a snail's pace. In fact, it's close to frozen. There's over 300 bills that passed the House that weren't able to make their way through the Senate. And so, you know, I think the root cause of that is partisanship. You know, we have a culture in Washington, D.C. that is predicated on blaming, shaming, grandstanding, and scapegoating on your opponent so that you can receive a chairmanship in the next cycle. You know, the Senate being a, I think about the Senate that Daniel
Inouye. That is so inside the Beltway, I can't even get my head around.
Yeah, no, I hear you, I think the Parnis view each other as almost enemies at this point, the way that they behave. And so I think we need to send a bipartisan, not somebody who is so partisan, so far to the right that they're hardly even recognizable to Republicans. You know, I can't see Joe Miller working with anybody on the Democratic side or anybody even in the moderate Republican side. I can't see Joe Miller coming there talking about the elimination of all spending that's not constitutionally mandated. I don't know that he brings Republicans from New England on board, let alone any Democrat. So, you know, I think we need a proven bipartisan. When I was the president of the State School Board Association, when I was on the board of the Alaska Municipal League, in my service on the board of the Humanities Forum, you know, when I'm serve as a chair of the Southeast Conference of Mayors, when I was the president of the School Board Association, I wasn't the president of liberal school board members or Democratic school board members. You know, we crafted a shared vision. We worked to structure that vision through policy and budget. We go out and advocate for our vision to our stakeholders. We hold ourselves accountable to do the things we say we're going to do. And we work to maintain a level of ethics that allows us to do the first four. That's what local governance is about. That's what national governance ought to be about. Because right now, tell you, it's poisonous in Washington, D.C., and the work of the American people is not getting done. So people who feel disenfranchised, people who feel like the process is broken, I'd encourage them to take a look at us, because eliminating Social Security or privatizing it, you know, cutting out every earmark. You know, Joe Miller signed a pledge. He signed a pledge. There's a group out there called the Coalition of Citizens Against Government Waste. And this is the group that always worked to shame and kind of embarrass Senator Stevens. They always gave him the Porker Award. They always gave, not understanding that we're a young state in need, as a matter of equal footing, of infrastructure investment, just as every other Western state enjoyed during their development. So this group has not been a friend to Alaska. Joe Miller signed their national pledge. And in that pledge, he vowed, and this, it says, uses the word vow. He vowed not to vote on any appropriation that's not part of the president's regular budget or that serves a local or special interest. Well, I'm a mayor. I'm a guy who has gone to Washington, D.C. and stood on his head on behalf of my town for infrastructure money for roads and utility infrastructure and ports and harbors. And, you know, every mayor, every small town in this state needs that type of development. I think that Joe Miller would be bad for Alaska. I think he's a threat to our economy.
Well, I think we're ready for some phone calls, but I want to tip my hat just a bit to you for there's nothing that is much more of a minefield than the foundation formula. And if you managed to dance through that one, you did something.
Well, I was part of a coalition of people who worked on that, but certainly we passed a resolution in support of it throughout every chamber of commerce and almost every chamber of commerce, school board and city councils all over Southeast Alaska. Yeah, we did a lot of work on that as a school board association under my year as president. So you bet.
Let's go to Tom, joins the program from Homer. Tom, you're on the air with Scott McAdams. Do you hear okay there, Scott?
I can hear, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, Scott.
Hi, Tom.
I wanted to get your position on some issues here that concern me. One of them is we're involved with two wars, and we got hundreds of military bases around the world, and we're targeting certain people for assassination with our drones and so forth. And I just wanted your position on some of that. Another issue is this health plan with Obama and the Congress's 2,700-page health plan. I was wondering what your position is on that plan. And another one is the invasion of our southwest border and the Arizona laws. What's your position on that one? And China has about 10,000 engineers working on mass transit. And I was wondering if you got some thoughts on mass transit for Alaska and the United States.
Boy, that's a long agenda there, Tom. Let's do what we can to run through it. Do you want to stay on the line, Tom?
I will if you like.
Okay, good.
Thanks, Tom. Let's start with the first question regarding the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, I believe that especially in the case of Afghanistan. Al-Qaeda continues to be a threat to the world, a threat to the West. And we need to do what we can to pursue and contain Al-Qaeda. But, you know, as Alaska's next United States senator, anytime I ever vote on an appropriation that puts our servicemen in harm's way, servicemen and servicewomen in harm's way, I'll ask and I will doggedly ask the administration for a clear set of objectives, for benchmarks, for a definition of what success looks like. Because, you know, we don't have the capacity either in our budget, and we certainly, the priceless cost of loss of an American soldier, we can't afford to get overmired in the business of nation building and to be a continuous presence on multiple fronts across the globe. So, you know, as I serve, you know, I'll always ask the administration for a clear definition, a clear picture of what success looks like, because we certainly can't afford to be continually engaged in war. Regarding the healthcare plan, there are some obviously some good things and some bad things. I think with 150 Republican amendments, this is what we might call a bipartisan bill. But, you know, taking a look at this thing, my biggest concern about it is the mandated premiums portion of it. And, you know, when I go back, my position is not repeal. My position's improvement on the bill. There's also, a lot of things that are good about it. The one that comes to mind is the fact that children with pre-existing conditions can no longer be denied service. But, you know, here's what we do know, and here's what I see in my community and around the state. We have far too many small business owners, you know, commercial fishermen, the self-employed, who can't afford health insurance because the premiums are so high. So, you know, I do think that there is a lot of area where we can improve in healthcare, and I'll work hard on that when I'm elected. Regarding immigration, I mean, I think that when you take a look at the state of illegal immigration or undocumented workers in this country right now, I mean, the first thing I think that we need to do is secure the borders and enforce the laws that we have. But, you know, we are a humane people. And to say that somehow we're going to bus 11 million people over the border is not realistic, and it doesn't match America's values. I think that we need to get honest about our dependence on undocumented workers. You know, we've got employers in this country that ask us to look the other way while they hire these folks. I think whenever there's a demand, there's going to be a supply, and so maybe we need to work on the demand side of undocumented workers. And then mass transit. The reauthorization of the Safety Lou Transportation Bill is a piece where I actually disagree with a lot of Democrats in the Congress. We need to have equity in all of our formula programs. We need to have equity between urban and rural Americans in the reauthorization. Mass transit certainly is important to get the economy scale to be able to do mass transit. You almost have to, I mean, certainly we have People Mover and we have some mass transit in Alaska, but we need to also make sure that we have money to take care of our roads, to take care of our marine transportation needs in this state. And so I'll be fighting for equity in the formula, making sure that rural interests are served and Alaskan interests are served.
Tom?
Yeah, I just wanted to know his position on these. I'd like to send him a copy of my health plan that I proposed, which was just a half a page instead of 2,700. I'll send that to him.
All right.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Thank you very much.
We were just down in Homer, and I had a great time down there. I love that city. It reminds me a lot of Sitka.
Thank you, Tom and Homer. We'll go now to Fairbanks and Omar. Omar, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Scott McAdams.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Omar.
Hi. So I've been listening to your whole program here. I'm an Iraqi war veteran. Who currently now is a senior at UAF studying psychology. I've heard your position on infrastructure, on fishing and resource extraction for Alaska, on education, which I love definitely, and how you want to increase Alaskan jobs through these things. I love it. The thing that I'm worried about is the excitement that is going on with that discontent and in the support of Joe Miller. This guy is poison, and I don't understand how people can seriously believe that this guy is going to actually help us out. So my question to you is, how can we get more people, more not of the people that are involved in organizations and groups, but the average guy out there, how do we get him to vote for you and vote in the direction that we need to go to? And I'll take my answer off there.
Okay, Omar, thank you. Well, I kind of asked you that question before, and I think I will let you think about what more you have to say about kindling enthusiasm.
Sure.
As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, has been asked to administer the new temporary federal insurance program that allows individuals with a qualifying pre-existing condition and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months an opportunity to purchase health insurance. Capacity is limited, so contact an insurance broker or ACHEA immediately. More information at achia.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
It's Talk of Alaska, and Scott McAdams is running for U.S. Senate. He got the Democratic nomination, and there's just all kinds of excitement over on the other side. So the question that came in was, how could you possibly match that sort of enthusiasm? You know, Scott, we're in extraordinary times. I think there's, as you said, there's kind of a discontent with the gridlock, but maybe it's a little beyond that. Maybe it's this time people say business as usual just ain't going to work.
Sure. You know, certainly there are folks out there who do feel disenfranchised with the process, who wonder, you know, what's next for America, who see our $13 trillion federal deficit and the unfunded liabilities in some of our programs out there and wonder, how are we ever going to bridge this gap? But, you know, when I take a look at the way that the Senate has behaved, I mean, in so many ways, it's been a millionaire's club that has taken care of the interest of billionaires. And, you know, when I look at federal spending, you know, I'd add, Steve, I'm the only guy in this race, especially the race between Joe Miller and I, who's ever had to vote on a public budget. I'm the guy in this race who's had to cut a public budget. We just had to cut $1.4 million out of a $25 million budget in Sitka because of declining revenue through some declining tourism. But, you know, in doing that, we didn't work to embarrass our public employees. We didn't work to talk about how they, you know, that they, we didn't try to embarrass them. And we actually led on the issue. We asked folks through our city administrator to our department heads to help us craft the budget to find the cuts where we could find efficiencies. And, you know, our staff responded. We got out and led on it, and that's how we delivered. But, you know, I think folks are concerned about the future of this country. When I take a look at federal spending, when I take a look at the federal budget, as I understand it, we've got a $3.5 trillion federal budget. Next year, we're going to bring in 11% less revenue to help meet that budget need. And that's because of the Bush tax cuts for the rich. You know, when you take a look at the structure of revenue on the revenue side in this country, there used to be a time prior to Ronald Reagan when corporations in this country paid 40% of the bill to do government in America. Now they spend 7%. They pay 7% of the bill. And, you know, we've been borrowing and spending for years and years and years. I think that we need to take a look at how we bring more equity to the tax code. You know, I'm for actually a permanent continuation of the Bush tax cuts for the middle class, because people making less than $250,000 a year. Because I believe that demand creates its own supply. When you put money in the hands of working people and build a strong middle class, that's how you fix our economy and how you take care of some of our looming budget issues. You don't do it on the backs of senior citizens. You don't do it on the backs of kids. You don't strip an $1,100 Social Security check from an Alaskan senior when you've got millionaires who are taking their revenue offshore, money that they made in America, and they're not paying the full their full fair share of taxes in this country.
Scott McAdams, yes or no, is the federal government going broke?
The federal government is going broke. You know, it's a matter of how do we fix it. You know, I think there's a lot of fear, and I think that's part of what has driven people to Joe Miller in this race. I mean, fear of the future. But I can tell you, we can fix this. I mean, Americans have got the potential. This is a great nation. We have got the ability to plot a new course, to recreate a manufacturing sector in this country. You know, our campaign is about jobs. It's about bringing jobs back to America. In this country, we have, through as a matter of public policy, allowed ourselves to be offshored, outsourced, deregulated, and free traded to death. You know, I think it's time that we reestablish a manufacturing base, that we you know, advocate for American grown and American extracted natural resources.
Mm. Scott McAdams is our guest. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255. Local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. And email talk@APRN.org, from which Michael asks this question about the future of our climate and our carbon dioxide emissions, and whether you would support the House bill if you get in the Senate.
I'm the candidate in this race who recognizes that climate change is real, that the science is there, that the planet is warming, and that there is a human element to that process. I don't believe this is just a natural phenomenon because it's so accelerated. You know, when you take a look at carbon, I think Alaska, you know, when you talk to any energy realist, and even President Obama talked about this in his fireside chat, we're not going to completely get off carbon-based energy anytime soon. I mean, it's going to be a transition period. For folks who believe that we're just going to go from no oil and gas or no oil in our global economy to 100% renewable in a pole shift, it's just not going to happen. So we need to bring new oil online. We need to bring our gas to market. But let me talk a little bit about renewables. So climate change is real. I fully understand it. I mean, I'm a 39-year-old guy who has kids, and I want to endow them with a livable planet as much as anyone else does. But, you know, this comes back to Alaska, and this campaign's about Alaska. And when you take a look at Alaska, we have got 150 independent energy grids that produce electricity for their municipalities throughout this state. These different standalone utility grids are too far apart from one another to ever connect. We're not going to have a grid, let alone a smart grid, in Alaska. You know, I think that the conditions are perfect. And with so much of Alaska being publicly held, you know, less than 1% of Alaska is privately owned. I think that there needs to be a national call to action on renewable energy. I think we need a comprehensive energy bill. But I think Alaska should be on the forefront of that. When you take a look at Alaska's renewable energy atlas, there is not a community in this state that doesn't have some sort of renewable energy right near the community. So the call to action would be maybe even as part of a process of finally convincing people to open ANWR, because I believe development of ANWR and ANWR oil, when you compare it to oil extracted in Nigeria or in the Middle East, that ANWR oil is actually the progressive choice in a global marketplace. But maybe use ANWR and the royalty structure, the half of the royalty that goes into the black hole of the federal budget right now, taking that and creating a renewable energy permanent fund in Alaska, to be able to take these 150 communities in this state that have to burn diesel to generate electricity and making them one at a time, five at a time, 10 at a time, renewable. I think that would energize Alaska's economy. I think it would put working people with jobs in this state. I think the skilled labor that would be needed would put our unions to work. But more than that, I think that the things that we would learn, the mistakes that we would make, the innovations that would take place could provide a blueprint to the world. No place is like Alaska in this way. There's no other state that I'm aware of, maybe even any place that is underdeveloped on this planet that has the stranded renewable potential that we have. Let's use our oil wealth and our future oil wealth to help leverage a transition into a new economy and make Alaska the Silicon Valley of renewable energy.
I never heard the expression stranded. What was it?
Renewable. Stranded renewables. We've got stranded water, stranded geothermal, stranded wind. We can do it. And, you know, just to take this one step further, I look at this from the lens of being a school governance leader. You know, we've got school districts in this state, Yukon Flats, you know, Beaver, Fort Yukon, the districts out there, that have to spend 35 cents on the dollar from their instructional money for stove oil. Well, when you're spending 35 cents on the dollar for stove oil and not spending that money on textbooks and spending that money on pencils to recruit and retain the highest quality teachers, you are at a disadvantage. And so making these villages in Alaska renewable is even a civil rights issue.
Well, I want to go to the energy question a bit more, and I know that this is kind of more of a state policy than a federal question, but still, I hear it over and over again in the statewide context. Fuel prices in the bush are killing people economically, forcing people to leave because they cannot pay them. Everybody has this or that move toward a solution. You've mentioned renewables. Can you go any further than that?
Well, you know, I think I can speak from down in Sitka. We own our public utility. It's actually owned by the city and borough of Sitka. So as mayor, I'm the governance chair ultimately of our public utility. You know, we down in that community, we have got 100% of our electricity is renewable. It comes from our hydroelectric wealth down there. But, you know, Alaska is a young state. And Alaska neither benefited from nor has the scars of having lived through the Industrial Revolution. So much of the wealth, so much of the prosperity that America enjoys, the lower 48 states, are a direct result of having lived through, the age of expansion. I think that because of that, Alaska should be first in line with our federal partners and with private sector too. I mean, there's a lot of private sector jobs in green energy. I think we should be first in line to create a new energy economy in Alaska. Let this place be developed in a new way. Because I tell you, if there's anywhere, if there's any place on this planet where some of these dreams and ideas of having a new energy platform, a new basis of our economy, if it can happen in Alaska, I think it can happen anywhere. So that's what I'll fight for.
Well, you know, in the shorter term, though, Nathan from Southeast says, look, I live here. I work in timber. I'm afraid that our timber is pretty much locked up in federal lands, and I'm wondering how you feel, and I guess I would say add, being as how you were already on record as opposing the Sea Alaska legislation, what's the role of the Tongass in the economy of Southeast Alaska?
Well, I'll start by actually taking some issue with being on record as being opposed to the Sea Alaska land bill. I'm for a Southeast Alaska land bill that is equitable to all users, and that includes Native groups. I mean, one of the things I talked about during the debate with Joe Miller down in the Juneau chamber is this: there are some parts of the Sea Alaska land bill I absolutely support. One being taking Native lands and putting them back in Native hands as it relates to sacred sites. I mean, I think I absolutely completely support that. And that's about 2,000 acres in a 17 million acre forest that are sacred and ceremonial sites. Those need to be repatriated back to Native people, and I support that. We also have the issue of five landless tribes in Southeast Alaska. You know, we often don't talk about tribes in Alaska. We have 229 tribes here. We have almost half of America's tribes. You know, if we elect a guy who doesn't believe that unemployment insurance is constitutional and doesn't support, is a self-proclaimed constitutional conservative that doesn't support an earmark or an appropriation that's not part of the president's budget, I mean, I think that we need to really think hard about our 229 tribes and the services that they provide through federal title dollars to educate kids, to deliver social services, to help create economy in their communities. We really need to talk about tribes. And I think that down in Southeast, whether it be timber, and I do believe that they're in the Tongass, that there's plenty of room for value-added timber in that economy. My big goal, and one of the things that I'll always fight for, is I hope that long gone are the days where Alaska continues to be a colony, a banana republic, a place where people come and extract resources to be shipped somewhere else to fuel economic development. You know, I think that there's room for timber down in Southeast. I'm not opposed to timber industry. It's just I don't think that we need to whether it be timber or minerals or even oil, wherever we can add value to it and create jobs in Alaska, we need to be innovative about that. So, you know, is there room for a timber economy in Southeast Alaska? Absolutely there is. And, you know, I'm not a zero-cut guy. I just think we need to be responsible about it.
When you were mayor of Sitka, did you screw up the Sheldon Jackson attempt to try and preserve that college?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I am a graduate of Sheldon Jackson College. I'm a former president of the association of the student body of Sheldon Jackson College. You know, the Dubuque University chapter of taking over and that college being conveyed to Dubuque is now closed. You know, initially there was a lot of enthusiasm. We thought that we had a anchor tenant for that property. As the process continued to develop, it just didn't pencil out for the community. I mean, the city and borough of Sitka is a $25 million a year operation. You know, the word on the street is there is upward of $50 million of deferred maintenance on that campus alone, and things like asbestos abatement and structural integrity and roofs. And having gone to school there, I'm keenly aware of that. And yeah. You know, the Dubuque deal, from my view, was a handful of jobs for an initial five. You know, they wanted us to try to find $5 million to match you know, some sort of personnel investment on their side. I could not in good conscience put that kind of liability and dump it in the laps of Sitka taxpayers for a handful of jobs. I mean, certainly there will continue to be a role for the city in helping shepherd that campus to its next phase. But it's an independently owned piece of property. There was, you know, an outside suitor that took a look at that property, and, you know, it just didn't pencil out for the taxpayers in Sitka. I personally think I would have put a huge liability, and as much as I love that campus, as much as I want to see a good end to that piece of real estate, I couldn't in good conscience take that liability for the small benefit of just a handful of jobs and a couple, you know, maybe a month a year of educational programming there. It just didn't pencil out.
Scott McAdams is our guest. It's Talk of Alaska. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255 statewide. In Anchorage, 550-8422. Email talk@APRN.org as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance has a simple request. If you smoke, take it outside. Smoking hurts more than just you. Secondhand smoke increases the risk of coronary heart disease and kills nearly 50,000 non-smoking Americans every year. Smoking around your kids causes chronic and life-threatening diseases and is linked to sudden infant death syndrome. If you choose to smoke, make a choice that protects others who don't. Take it outside. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
It's Talk of Alaska. Scott McAdams is the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate. We intend to get all the candidates on as best we can between now and the election. We appreciate your first appearance here. We've had Murkowski and Miller on before, and we want to have them on again.
Well, thanks, Steve. It's great to be here. You know, Talk of Alaska is something we listen to down in Southeast Alaska. You know, down in that part of the state, public radio is a huge part of the culture of our communities. The Coast Alaska Network down there, all the Southeast towns. There was a time in my childhood when KFSK in Petersburg was the only media in my house. So, you know, your market share in that media environment's probably a lot higher than it is in some of our other areas.
Yeah, I remember when Sarah Palin came on here and she said, you know, I've been listening to you since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Same thing for you. Right?
Absolutely.
Fascinating. Caroline joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Caroline.
Yes, thank you so much. I think that I'm listening to someone running for office from about 1955. You are the most reasoned, well-informed candidate I have heard in years. And as a nonpartisan, I can tell you that you're going to do very well, I think. People are fed up with the vitriol and the name-calling and the rah-rah cheerleading aspect of our politics now. So thank you very much for running. I heard kind of a snarky comment from someone about, well, we haven't had much luck with mayors of small towns. And Steve, you remember when I called in about Bill Egan and what he meant to this state?
I do indeed.
And he was a mayor of Valdez before he became governor. A particular interest to me is the balance that you seem to have between what's going to be important for Alaska and for the country, because, you know, as a senator, your vote means a great deal to the entire country. So what do you see that balance as?
Absolutely. I mean, certainly the United States Senate is the United States Senate, and national interests are certainly part of the work there in Washington, D.C. You know, I got to say, though, that I do see myself as being somebody who will have an Alaskan bias for sure. I mean, this campaign for me is about Alaska. I think that because we have so many national land holdings here, because Alaska still is a young state that needs to be developed, still needs to be invested in. You know, I think that continuing to fight for appropriations, continuing to fight for requests made by local communities, requests that aren't part of the president's budget but are needed here in Alaska, will be my first order of business. You know, as it relates to national issues, I mean, certainly, you know, I will still be looking back to Alaska to see, you know, what the impacts are here in our local communities in our state as it relates to issues of national importance. So, you know, for me, this campaign is about Alaska. I really appreciate your phone call. Thanks so much for the kind words. But for me, first and foremost, it's about Alaska. I think that, you know, we'll continue to also make sure that America is competitive in a global marketplace. We'll make sure that American workers have every ability to compete with people everywhere else in the world, that we have an equal playing field there. So, yeah, there are certainly national issues that we'll be very involved in.
I want to give you a chance to be. Thank you, Caroline, for the call there.
Welcome.
I want to give you a chance to be a little bit visionary here. Some of the things that have been brought up to me is we could be generating hydrogen for a future hydrogen economy. We are cold enough up here that we probably already really should have server farms for the rest of the world. The Arctic Ocean has probably gone into a ice stage now that it's not going to come back from. Whether it's a death spiral or not is a different question. But basically, it looks like it just went to a new phase. And from now on, we're going to get similar sea ice conditions for a while. And this means shipping. This means the nation getting serious about icebreakers. Russia's got 70-some. Finland has got... Everybody's got more icebreakers than the United States because both of ours are busted.
Sure.
So try and put yourself in the position now of what can we start promoting that's going to be important 50 years from now when Alaska becomes 100 years old.
Sure, absolutely. Well, and certainly the need for federal investment is going to be part of that equation. When you take a look at the Northwest Passage opening up shipping routes to Europe that actually go through the Arctic, Alaska is the United States' presence in the Arctic. And so certainly we will need to be able to patrol, keep those shipping routes safe. And that will require that we have a presence of the United States Coast Guard in the Arctic. I think that's one of the big things that will come down the pipeline sooner than later, is having somebody in D.C. who understands those needs. You know, you'd mentioned server farms or data storage areas. You know, I think that we've got a couple, just some low-hanging fruit, some real unique opportunities to work with. I think that our Native corporations, our 210 village and 13 regional Native corporations, are well positioned through the Small Business Administration 8A program to secure federal contracts, to secure contracts to manage data. I know that Sea Alaska is in that business right now, and I think we need to do whatever we can to encourage people to bring that economy here. It's going to require some infrastructure development. I mean, granted, we need to have the energy. Data farms are high-energy endeavors. We need to make sure we have affordable and reliable energy, a highly trained workforce. You know, the backbone of any economy is reliable transportation, affordable energy, and a highly trained workforce. You know, we need to continue to develop all the enabling conditions for that. I think Alaska could be, you know, on the forefront of data management if we have a delegation that understands that that's appropriate investment, that it is not something that is unmandated constitutionally.
Okay, just a couple more real quick, and then the show's over. We got a question about the Chukchi and Beaufort, and the suggestion that there's better technology than the industry is required to use right now in terms of blowout prevention. What's your position on exploring in the Arctic Ocean with seismic and developing what appear to be some pretty big deposits?
There is a lot of oil and gas out there. And one of the things that we need to be keenly aware of is that the golden goose of Prudhoe Bay is entering its golden years. And, you know, that source of revenue and that source of income, which fuels every corner of our state. Down in Southeast Alaska, I don't know a lot of people that work in the oil and gas industry, but I know a lot of people who work as teachers and firefighters and cops, and those dollars come through revenue sharing and come through...
So you're favoring it now.
So I'm favoring it, yeah. So, you know, we need to have the highest environmental standards in the world for development, and in a lot of ways we do, but I'll tell you, regulating industry, some people will say, you know, we need to deregulate more. We're creating a competitive disadvantage for Americans. I disagree. As a small town mayor, you know, people often ask me, why do you have so many cops? Well, my answer is that, you know, we can't get coordinating services in. It's always too much until the moment it's not enough, and that's the same with regulation. I'm for the safe development of the Chukchi.
Time's up. Thank you. To the tech crew of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft and airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a pre-existing medical condition, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the new temporary federal insurance program being administered by ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. The program is for those with qualifying pre-existing conditions and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months. Talk to an independent insurance broker or go online to ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.